Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 196 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm not your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me.
Now it's actually me. That was one of my oldest friends, Miguel Gozano from Valley Combat and Tactical in Abbotsford, British Columbia. Miguel was in the studio to do an interview with me for something we're going to talk about today, which is the Canadian government intends to rip off the vast majority of firearm owners that participate in the compensation, otherwise known as the confiscation program. And part of understanding whether or not that's a true statement is understanding how many firearms that there are in circulation in Canada that were previously non-restricted that are now prohibited that the government wants. Okay, so we've come up with numbers and we're going to compare them to what the government has told us. Some of that information has been floating around for the last couple of weeks, but Miguel's almost going to provide some testimony to how many guns there actually are in circulation versus how many guns the government has decided it's going to pay for. So that's an important part of this episode. We're going to talk about that a lot more, and I'm going to give you all the information there. Wilson is also going to be on. She went to a rally in Cape Breton for the kickoff of the confiscation program there, the pilot project. And you won't believe all of the extra details of what actually happened there. Some of the things are actually going to be quite shocking. We're going to also talk about the Liberals defeating the conservative bail reform bill. Apparently, actual public safety is not even on the Liberals' radar, but a whole bunch of other things are. And as well, the labor union for the Cape Breton Police has come out with a statement, as well as the Toronto Police Service and others, pushing back against the government for wasting all this money and continuing to punch gun owners in the face. Anyway, all that and more. CCFR Radio starts right now. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Ready, Aim, Shop. Bullseye North is where passion meets precision. Discover a huge selection of top-notch rifles, accessories, and ammo. Whether you're perfecting your aim at the range or gearing up for hunting season, Bullseye North has you covered with free shipping on orders over $300, including ammo. Some exclusions apply. Check out bullseyenorth.com and remember to subscribe to their newsletter, bullseyenorth.com. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. All right, we're back. I need to give you some serious information. Some of it you may have heard before, but I have new information, but I can't tell you that until I go over what we already know. Really important. So this is about the government intending to rip off basically everybody that tells them what they have who attempts to participate in this confiscation program. I don't think that it's an accident. I think they're doing it on purpose for a variety of different reasons, but this is what they know because they know full well I'm going to tell you guys this. It relates to the number of firearms that the government admits it's willing to pay for and provide compensation for, right, in this confiscation program versus the number of firearms in circulation. I have new information here. So if you guys remember, I'm going to try to explain this. There's going to be some numbers, but I'm going to stop a few times during this and give you kind of the takeaway, all right? I'm just going to rattle this stuff off. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, Wilson, myself, and CCFR General Counsel Mike Loberg were in the technical briefing that Public Safety put on to reveal all the details and what have you for the compensation / confiscation program pilot that's rolling out in Cape Breton. Now, if you remember, I asked a bunch of questions about the quantities of firearms and what was in circulation and, you know, what they were willing to pay for, because they said this is a capped program. They're spending $742 million no matter what, not a penny more, and includes administrative costs, everything. And I seem to remember that they said the retail buyback as well. Loberg said, no, I don't think that included the retail buyback. So keep that in your head for now. And I was like, okay. Now, if you remember some of the numbers were that I had said, well, how many, they said, well, we're paying an average of $1,800 per firearm. And I'm like, well, how many firearms do you intend to buy at $1,800 like on average, right? And they said 152,000 and change. None of these numbers were round. I'm just giving you the rounded numbers, values. Accuracy is important to me, right? Truth is important to me. So I'm like, 152,000. I said, there's 90,000 ARs in Canada. And they're like, actually, we have more numbers for you. There are 126,000 restricted long guns that are now prohibited. I'm like, okay, so all the ARs and some other stuff. And I'm like, okay, fine. So if you take all those out, what you're telling me is that versus the number of firearms that are in circulation over the last 60, 80 years, whatever, that were previously non-restricted that are now prohibited, you're willing to pay for, well, 152,000 firearms in total minus 126,000 equals 26,000 firearms. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, we're confident in that number. And remember, I said that's diabolical, because you're going to get people to tell you what they have, you know, in hopes that they're going to get compensated, how they were promised on, I don't know, 1,000 occasions over the last 5.5 years. And then you're going to rip them off. And I said, that's diabolical, right? And because it is. It's wildly malevolent. And so, you know, I had a chance to think about that. And I'm like, well, how many firearms are there in circulation? What percentage chance, if all Canadians participated in this, would they have of getting paid? Now, remember, the government knows all this stuff, right? Like, these are not stupid people, right? They know all this stuff. And they know that I'm going to tell you all of it too, right? So you can add that to, you know, the list of motivations, of incentives, that, you know, what are they trying to do here? So anyway, I'm thinking, well, man, there's got to be I think I've said different numbers the whole time, because I'm trying to rationalize what that number would be. All the non-restricted firearms throughout Canadian history that are now prohibited in a quantity right now that's in circulation. And I'm like, is it 250,000? Is it 400,000, 800,000? I've said lots of different numbers because I didn't really know, because I never looked into it myself, but I recently did. And this is the new information I have for you. So, you know, we come out of that meeting and I'm like, how many guns are there? And I thought, you know, I need to find out, because the government says that they're willing to pay for basically 26,000 of them. Now, Loberg said that the buyback figures, there was 13,000 guns that came out of this fund. Whether or not that was included in this fund has already been spent. That was for 13,000 firearms for the retail buyback. If that's true, some of them were probably restricted, right? We're lumped into those other numbers. But if that's true, you'd have to subtract that from the 26,000 they're willing to buy, right? So I don't know, maybe some of them are restricted, let's say half of them. So what is that, 20,000 firearms left that they're willing to buy? So here's the takeaway. They are willing to pay for 20,000, anywhere from 13 to 20,000 guns out of some number of non-restricted, now prohibited firearms in circulation in the history of the country. Okay. What is the number in circulation so we can figure out whether anybody's getting paid or not? So as I said, I wasn't sure. So I did my own little research project. So I called one of the biggest retailers in Canada, probably one of the 10 biggest retailers. And I said to this gentleman, I'm like, hey, listen, just give me a finger in the wind. It doesn't have to even be that accurate, just a feeling. You know your business really well. This guy's owned this business for, I don't know, whatever, 16, 15, 18 years or something like that. And I'm like, how many firearms do you think you sell in a year, or have sold, I should say, that were previously non-restricted that are now prohibited? And he's like, hey, man, I sell 50,000 guns a year. And he goes, more than half of them should be non-restricted. And probably they're probably all prohibited now. And I'm like, okay, so what you're telling me is plus or minus 25,000 firearms a year were previously non-restricted and now prohib. And he's like, yeah, should be somewhere around there. I can find out for sure if you want. I'm like, no, you don't have to do that. I just need some kind of figure, just to kind of get an idea. If you think that is at all accurate, like think about that for a second. This guy for 18 years or whatever it was is selling somewhere probably between zero and 25,000 a year. Like, I think safely we could say that individual has sold 250,000 himself, right? 10 years. And let's say he's sold a lot less for the first 8 years of his business or whatever that number was. Like in 1 year, he sold more, almost double what the government is planning to buy back from the entire population. Like this is a big deal, right? So I'm like, okay, fine. Let's just let that sit. So there's 10 retailers about the size of him in the entire country. Don't even start doing the math on that. Leave that for now. Because that blows this whole conversation out of the water. I talked to somebody that owns what they would consider a medium to small sized retailer in Canada. Remember, there's 500 firearm retailers in Canada, 500 of them. I talked to three. Okay, so this is number two, small to medium sized gun seller. I'm like, hey man, how many of these guns do you think you've sold? And he's like, you know, six. And he same thing. Actually, all three businesses I talked to, 15 to 18 years they've been in business. He's like, I don't know, since I started, 20,000, 16,000, 15, I don't know, somewhere around there. Let's say on the low end, let's say it's 15. One store, small to medium sized, sold 15,000 non-restricted firearms that are now prohibited. That one small to medium sized store comprises all the guns that the government is actually willing to pay for in this confiscation program. Like, think about that for a second. Then I talked to my buddy Miguel, who you saw in the opening. We're going to talk to him in person here in the studio in a second. He considers himself the smallest firearm retailer in the country, has 8-10 guns, whatever it is on the wall. I can't remember what he said, because I recorded this with him a few days ago. And he himself thinks that he sold 300 of them, give or take, in the history of his business. So the smallest gun store out of 500 of them across the country sold 300. When you think that the government's willing to pay for somewhere around, I don't know what, 15,000, 13 to 20,000 of them in total. So even if we said the government on the top end was going to buy another 20,000 firearms. And now look at that versus how many firearms are in circulation. But wait, I call one more person, and that was Wes Winkle of the CSAAA, because this is the industry lobby. And I said to him, Wes, I have questions for you. If you were to guess, how many firearms do you think are previously non-restricted and are now prohibited in circulation? He says, we don't have to guess. Global Affairs Canada has all the numbers for every make, model, serial number, description, where it came from, and what distributor or retailer it went to for every gun that's in circulation in Canada since 2002. The government knows exactly how many, at least since 2002, 24 years, how many of these guns there are in circulation. I'm like, okay, that's a problem in itself, because it's almost like they almost come off like, oh yeah, we don't know where all these guns are. It's like, yeah, I know you don't know where they all are, but I know you know how many there are. Oh, we don't know. You know, if you remember, Bill Blair said, oh, this is, we think that there's about 180,000 of these guns, or 140. And I was like, yeah, okay. Like, we laughed at them because these people are liars, right? They're congenital liars. They don't even know when they're lying. They just lie as a reflex, right? So I was like, yeah, whatever. We'll work this out later. Well, later's now. So Wes says, yeah, he goes, you know, I told him some of them. He goes, oh yeah, that's easy to believe. There's probably a million in the last 24 years that are now prohibited, that were non-restricted, that's come into the country in circulation as we speak. And I said, okay, well, that's about what I would have guessed. I guess if I had to guess, I don't know. I've guessed a bunch of different things, but that's good information. And he goes, but wait, that number pales in comparison to what came into the country before 2002, because that was implemented after 9/11. What came in, like the mini 14s, he goes, oh, there's so many of those, you wouldn't even believe it. Global Affairs didn't keep track. He goes, there's probably easily that same amount, if not way more. And I'm like, okay, for purposes of this conversation, could we say that there's 2 million in circulation? Is that reasonable? He goes, yeah, it could be that number, right? Because nobody really knows, right? 2 million. So if you think about it, it could be actually 3, 4, 5 million. Nobody knows, but certainly a million, and most likely at least 2 million. So if that's true, and the government is willing to pay for what? 20,000 of them? They're willing to pay for 1% of the firearms that are still in circulation that were previously non-restricted, now prohib. 1% of them. You would think, and then what they're doing, I don't want this to be too long, but they're saying, gun owners, come in, don't worry, we're going to compensate you. And then they put on the website, compensation not guaranteed. And then they're like, tell us what you have, and then we'll let you know how much you're going to get. Oh yeah, you're getting zero. We know you have those guns. Turn them in for destruction for free, or go to jail, or pay $500 a gun out of your own pocket to have them disabled, deactivated, and then send us the certifications, and then have a nice day. Screw you very much. That's their plan. Can you imagine? So of course, as I said before, they know we're going to tell you this. They invited us in there for a reason. So I don't know whether it's they don't want anyone to participate so they can look good on the budget front. I don't know whether they want to criminalize like literally 2 million Canadians. Right? I mean, there's some portion of those Canadians that are criminalized anyway because they don't have PALs, but they still have these guns from way back, whether they inherited them or whatever. They still have them on their property. But they want to criminalize all these PAL holders, probably 700,000, I would think, if I had to guess, that people have at least a PAL, not an RPAL, but a PAL that possess these firearms. They're going to pay a handful of them, I don't know what, 5,000 of them. The rest of them, they're going to screw them and make them criminals and pay them nothing. I don't know why this isn't a huge deal in the media. The media is a fickle animal and they have a lot of different incentives, but this is probably, should be the most enormous story in Canada right now. What the government plans to do to people that get a criminal record check every 24 hours. It's monstrous, man, but that's where this is going. So we are going to try, we're going to keep on screaming this from the rooftops. We're going to keep on hammering the government like you can't do this to people. We're going to keep on pushing the media to cover it. Like we're going to keep on fighting on this because this is insane. This is even worse than the confiscation program, right? They're trying to radicalize people by flat out lying to their faces, stealing their property, stealing their money, and threatening to put them in jail. For what? For what benefit to public safety? It's astounding, man. Like, I don't know what they're trying to do. I'm going to stop talking before I say something crazy, right? But I don't know what they're trying to do here. So anyway, make of that what you will. I know that was long. It's like 15 minutes, but it's a lot to explain. You need to know all this stuff. It's important. Okay. I'm going to leave it here, but thank you for listening to that. Now up next, I'm going to have my interview with one of my oldest friends, one of the best people I know that I ever met, my old buddy Miguel from Valley Combat and Tactical in Abbotsford, British Columbia. He's going to tell us a little bit about the numbers that we talked about and also what this buyback and the behavior of the government did to him, like one of the smallest guys out there. Oh, and one thing before we do that, I almost forgot to thank all the good people over the members and the board over at Mission Rod and Gun Club in Mission, British Columbia, for sending Tex and Wayne over here a couple of days ago and dropped off a $14,000 check so that we can continue to fight the government, punch them in the face every opportunity that we can for what they're doing to criminals. No, licensed gun owners. So thank you everyone over at Mission for your help, in the past and for this too, and everyone else that is supporting the CCFR. You know, if all of you are not giving up, we sure the heck can't give up. And so anyway, it's incredibly meaningful that we are all still in the fight, because it's, I've told you before on the podcast, flat out, it's not easy, right? Even I get discouraged. I'm like, man. And then of course we have people going, oh, you know, this was all a waste of time, a waste of money. You know, it's, we've lost all the rest of that stuff, taking their ball and going home. And so just two things. I know I was talking for a long time. Number one, if we don't prevail in stopping these people, then at least we can walk away saying that we fought them right to the end, that we didn't lose because we didn't try, or that we gave up too early or whatever. No, we fought them right to the last day. And number two, oh man, if we prevail, I'll have to record a podcast where I put a parental discretion advised warning in the front of it, because I'll be using a lot of bad language describing these people. So anyway, that's the way I see it there. So thank you to everyone that continues to support us. And thank you to everyone at the Mission Rod and Gun Club for your donation. It is incredibly appreciated. All right, here's, as promised, here's that interview with Miguel.
So we've known each other for a long time.
It's been a while.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How long is it? 30?
Really close to 30, give or take.
No, it's more than 30. We met when we were 20.
Oh, 35?
Yeah, well, yeah, 30, 36 years, something like that.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
We had long hair.
Yeah, it's we. I'm just going to leave the hair
there. Say it, man.
All right. So we're really talking about two questions today. We were talking on the phone about the buyback, so-called buyback, this confiscation scheme. And the reason I had called you was I was trying to figure out how many firearms there are in Canada in circulation that were previously non-restricted that are now prohibited. So I called a big gun store.
Yeah.
I called the industry group as well, and a big gun store, a medium-sized gun store. And so tell me a little bit about your store in Abbotsford, British Columbia, Valley Combat and Tactical, for those who are wondering where it is, and just tell me about the size of business you have.
We're small. I would argue that I'm the smallest gun store in Canada, or maybe 900 square feet, if you include the bathroom. On a thriving economy, before everything was banned, we'd have anywhere from 10 to 15 guns on the wall and lots of everything. But since everything and where we are now, I think I've got 5 guns on the wall.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 10 to 15 guns on the wall in the peak times. Now, the question that I asked you was, like, how long have you been in business again?
18 and a half years.
18 and a half years. In that 18 and a half years, how many guns do you think that you've sold that were non-restricted that are now prohibited? If you just had to take a wild guess.
I would guess anywhere from 300 up.
So 300, 400.
300, 400 maybe. Yeah.
So probably like
that list is, I mean, shotguns, 22s, my own kid's gun. Like, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So
300 to 400.
Self-proclaimed smallest gun store in the country. 300 or 400. Now, the reason why we were talking about that is the government said, oh, we are prepared to buy 152,000 firearms, and there are 500 gun stores in Canada.
Yeah.
And the smallest one has probably sold 300 to 400 of those guns. So we came up with the number somewhere between 1 and 2 million of these guns in circulation. So basically, if we said 1.5 million, the government's willing to pay for 10% of the guns out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus whatever's in stock at the stores that hasn't gone yet.
Yeah. So far they bought 12,000 from retail. And actually, you know what? We didn't talk about this, but that 12,000 is an interesting number because that's the number of guns when they just did the spot ban. That's how many were in stock.
That people have, that they know. Because I haven't told them what I've got. They know, but it's not reported because I haven't asked them for money because I don't think I'm going to get anything.
Right. But that's an interesting number right there. That's 10% of all the guns in the country they're going to buy were what just stores had at stock right at that moment.
Terrible math.
Yeah. Anyway. Just very interesting. Now, when we were talking about this, you talked about your business a little bit. Why don't you share that and with
just
everyone?
What happened there. Yeah. So obviously 2000 and the first ban 7 years ago, is it now?
It's 5.5 years ago.
Five and a half. So that obviously was a huge punch in the gut because we're not a hunting store. I can get hunting stuff, but I'm a black gun store, and they started banning black guns. So they just started chipping away and chipping away. And then I thought, over the last couple of years after COVID, that survived, one of the few businesses that survived COVID. And I thought, well, I'm floating now. I'm getting by. I can live. And then December last year, they banned everything I had on my wall. 3 weeks before Christmas, they took my stock away from me.
And that's the only time where you're really making some money.
Yeah. Christmas is like, yes, okay, I get to make another year of work. They took everything I had off the wall. They banned it all. So I took it all down. I took what little savings I had left, and it wasn't a lot. And I dumped it into new stock. And 3 weeks later, they banned all that stock. So it's an interesting time to go to work every day and try and sell the 5 guns I have left against the big box store that's 3 blocks away that has money and options.
And I think one thing that people forget are the kinds of guns that they banned, right? Because I'm constantly facing off with Pauly Saint-Sylvain and the rest of these people, these anti-gun groups
silly
and the
gooses.
Government. Yeah, the silly gooses. And they're saying these, and they don't even say assault style. They call them all assault weapons and weapons of war and all the rest of that stuff. So why don't we just back and forth a couple of guns? So GSG 16 was the one I always like to say.
16s, 15s.
Weapon of war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of those, the footage on Al Jazeera of them using those to shoot at tanks.
Yeah. The Ruger PC carbine.
Yeah. The folding Smith & Wesson FP9. All the little plinkers, basically all the camping guns, the fun little camping guns. Mm-hmm. That was the last, that was December. That's when it was just like the hobby guns. Your license.
Sub 2000, yeah.
Yeah, you get your license, the affordable, cheap, first, I can get my first little plinker and I can go camping with my buddies and shoot cans. No, you can't.
Yep.
Not
too
anymore.
Dangerous dome.
Yeah. Too scary.
We got to send them to Ukraine, apparently.
Good luck.
Yeah. Ukraine Special Forces running around with GSG 16s, 22, plastic 22 guns. Yeah. It's quite a nightmare.
It's going to really affect the armor.
Yeah. Well, what I will say, just before we wrap it up, because we're running out of time, is if you are in Abbotsford, British Columbia, and you need, what kind of stuff do you sell there?
Everything. I've got it all. I've got paintball and airsoft and pellet and BB. I've got crossbows. I've got
funny t-shirts.
I've got t-shirts. We do custom t-shirts, decals, semi-offensive, I call them, because everyone's offended by everything.
Yeah.
Survival stuff, outdoor
knives.
Stuff. Yep. Knives, hatchets, axes, training gear,
awesome.
Martial artsy stuff, camouflage, everything, a little bit of everything.
Cool. So that's Valley Combat and Tactical.
Yes,
in
sir.
Abbotsford, British Columbia on South Fraser Way.
Correct.
Right off McCallum, right?
Right near Five Corners.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you telling the story and coming out, man.
Thanks for having me here, man.
All right, we are back and via the internet, we have Tracy Wilson, I think her name is, from the CCFR. Wilson!
I was going to say, you can't have forgotten me because I missed one episode because I was sick. Come on now.
Well, I'm like most Canadians. I have a very short attention span, right?
Well, I'm back. I'm not entirely sure I'm better, but I'm back. I am, however, sporting my brand new CCFR blaze orange hunting hoodie in anticipation of my upcoming moose hunt.
Very nice. You were mentioning that that's a requirement for hunting in Ontario.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of centimeters you have to wear of orange, both on your head and on your person. So, yeah, it's a requirement here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you can fulfill that requirement by going right now to the CCFR merch shop at ccfr.ca.
Yeah. No, it's perfect.
I don't know. I don't do a lot of that. Did that sound authentic?
It was good. I liked it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got a lot of things to talk about, actually.
Yeah, we do.
And we got some interesting things to talk about. So we might as well get started with that. So the first thing we'll touch on is this this thing with Colt Canada playing a role. I mean, that's our information, is that this is the subcontractor that has been secured by the government to destroy all of these firearms that are, quote unquote, bought back, returned to the government, apparently, as Mark Carney likes to say. And Colt Canada is owned by CZ, or CZ in Canada, as we would like to call it. And they are taking a lot of heat for their role in both selling firearms and helping the government destroy them and enabling their confiscation program.
Yeah, that's right. So this has been all over the internet. And I'll admit that I thought this was already common knowledge because I've known it for a long time. So I was sort of surprised to see it blow up to where it is. But I mean, I guess that's good. I guess it was not common knowledge. But yeah, Colt Canada is a subsidiary of CZ, and they have secured a location about a 6-minute drive from their regular operations here in Ontario. And they are indeed the spot where retailers have been sending their newly prohibited firearms for destruction. So that's exactly what's going on. And I know there's been some conversation back and forth. CZ is saying they don't have anything to do with it. Now they're saying that they are not at liberty to discuss what other subsidiaries are doing. I know it's been picked up by some really big American YouTubers, you know, 2A guys. So yeah, it's sort of blowing up, but yep, they are helping the liberals destroy the firearms that have been sent in from retailers. And it is my understanding they'll be doing the same for the individual program.
Well, it's interesting the reaction that Americans are, you know, are showing CZ. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think that it should have been predictable for them, because in the United States, they have a codified right to own firearms. It is an enormous part of their culture. I would imagine CZ shouldn't have been surprised at the reaction they're getting from Americans. And you know, it's funny because, you know, Colt Canada, CZ, they couldn't care less about Canada as far as the market's concerned. They couldn't care less about what they do to us or participate in what the government is doing to us. But America, on the other side, like on the other hand, America is an enormous market, and it is enormously important to firearm manufacturers, like the civilian contracts and the civilian business. And I don't know, it's kind of interesting how they didn't see this coming, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, you're responsible for the decisions you make and the, you know, business decisions that you've made. So it is what it is. I mean, people have to make their own decisions about that. But yeah, I've long been pretty clear that I don't support any outfit that helps the government in any way carry out these confiscations against licensed gun owners across the country. So that's kind of where I stand on it.
All right.
Excuse me.
Let's move on now. There's a bit we need to talk about, and it's concerning this rally that you went to. You attended in Cape Breton, and it was the rollout of the pilot project for this confiscation program. And there's a bunch of different things we need to talk about in that. But I'll let you just kind of start off by saying by just sharing where you went, why you went there, and kind of what happened.
I'm sorry, I'm still struggling, but yeah. I heard about this rally. This was organized by Jeff McNeil from the Port Morian Wildlife Association and Mike Kelly from the Metro Rifle and Pistol Club. And they were organizing this in Cape Breton in opposition to the rollout of the buyback program. That's exactly right. In attendance was also Anna Manley. She's the Conservative candidate for Sydney Glace Bay, which is the riding where this was happening. Member of Parliament Blaine Calkins, who, as you know, is the chair for the Conservative Hunting and Angling Caucus and Shadow Minister for Hunting, Fishing and Conservation. A Newfoundland MP, Carol Ansey, who's fantastic from Long Range Mountains. And of course, Devin Drover, General Counsel for the Canadian Taxpayer Federation. So the whole lot of us got together. We were joined by about 250 capers, which is what they're called, not Cape Bretoners, they're capers. And we rallied on the lawn of the Cape Breton Regional Police Headquarters, which is right across the street from the Liberal MP's office, Mike Kellaway, who just coincidentally is the brother-in-law of the police chief. there was endless hours of honking. So we rallied from 12 to 5, and I was shocked how many people stuck it out for 5 hours. I mean, it was a beautiful sunny day, but that's still a long time to stand there holding a sign. And interestingly enough, the Cape Breton police closed their offices to the public for the entire day. They hired private security to guard the police, which is kind of weird because they're the police. They had a drone up in the air. I have a little video of it. I kind of zoomed in to check it out, but it was in the air the entire time from 12 to 5. There was a tactical team parked outside Mike Kellaway's office, the Liberal MP, the brother-in-law, across the road. And we basically had this peaceful rally. You know, there was nothing going on. We had some speakers. We waved signs. The public reaction was awesome. Tons of honking. And I noticed when I got to the airport the following day to come back to Ottawa, there was a statement out by the union representing the officers. And they talked about, you know, how there was a rally in their hometown and that their officers were neither consulted nor even informed that they were being volunteered to sign up to help the Liberals with their gun grab. So, yeah, word on the street is that the Cape Breton police are looking at a non-confidence vote for their police chief. I can't confirm that, but I guess we'll see what happens. But it has been an absolute nightmare of a rollout there. We did a town hall later that night with all those same speakers that I told you about. Had about 150 to 175 people come out to that. We were able to answer tons of questions. I want to do a huge shout out to the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. They are offering free legal advice to Cape Breton gun owners because, of course, when they called the police station to find out about this, you know, buyback confiscation program, they're being told apparently that it's, you know, that it's not optional, that they have to do it, which is not true. They're protected by the amnesty as long as the rest of us are. So our message to Capers was to not help participate in the pilot project. Don't let them figure it out, because the idea was to work through the bugs and, you know, perfect the program so that they can roll it out to the rest of us. So all in all, I would say it was a huge success. It's a very small area. So, you know, you're not going to get 5,000 gun owners like you can get on Parliament Hill, but yeah, just a really great day with amazing people and people who were super committed to the cause. So it was awesome.
Okay. So you rattled all that off fairly quickly, and congratulations on that. Great work. But there's a couple of things I think we need to kick around just a little bit. So the police close the office, and I'm like, you know, for me, I'm like, well, why would you do that? Then they have a drone hovering overhead all day long to surveil the crowd for some reason. And then they think it's necessary to put a tactical team across the street to protect the office and or the Liberal MP across the street. And the reason why this rubs me the wrong way is all of this to try to equate licensed gun owners who tolerate a criminal record check every day, who are governed by all the safe storage requirements, handling requirements, you know, transportation regulation, all this stuff. And they're trying to equate these people to extremists or unpredictable people in the society or criminals. Like,
which was insane because it was ridiculously peaceful. We had somebody rolling around with a garbage bag, you know, and if somebody dropped a Kleenex, like, we left it spotless. We were peaceful. There was no yelling or screaming. Like, it was, you know, totally unnecessary reaction to what was a very peaceful afternoon.
Yeah, it's your typical histrionic, hair on fire, lunatic reaction to a bunch of the most law-abiding people saying, hey, I don't think what you're doing is right. And we're going to stand in front of the police station. And we don't like the fact that our law enforcement is being used for this. And we don't like the fact that the chief is going hand in hand with, like, literally disarming the most law-abiding citizens because him and his brother-in-law are Liberal insiders, clearly. And, you know, and then we're on top of that. They couldn't keep the police station open, but they had the resources to have a TAC team there on site just in case what? The gun owners are going to go across the street and burn down the office of the Liberal MP. Like, these people are crazy, man. They're nuts.
Well, and it's interesting. I was speaking actually this morning with Jeff McNeil from the Port Morian Wildlife Association, and he's put in some A-tips to find out what it costs for all those extra measures, right, to guard the 250 people who stood there with signs while people honked at them driving by, you know, just an extreme response. He's put in some A-tips to find out what that cost. And interestingly enough, so Cape Breton's just it's an island that is part of Nova Scotia. And the jurisdiction of the Cape Breton Regional Police is just one half of that island. The other half doesn't have their own police force, but they are policed by H Division of the RCMP. But for some reason, it's interesting that owners, gun owners on that other half of the island outside the jurisdiction of Cape Breton Police are being told to participate in the program within the Cape Breton Police jurisdiction because H Division RCMP is not participating. So yeah, it's just a big mess. And, you know, for those reasons, I feel like between the leaked audio from the minister, you know, that you discussed on the last podcast, from this reaction in Cape Breton, it's been a really, really bumpy rollout. Excuse me. I know that, you know, people are asking me what I think might happen next. I don't know. Fredericton has also signed on, Fredericton Police Force, Winnipeg. There's a few other ones. So we'll see what they do. But yeah, just a ridiculous reaction by Police Chief Robert Walsh. You know, we're not dangerous people. And it just, you know, it was kind of silly. We could see them up in the windows and we would wave at them and, you know, whatever. But yeah, the people of Cape Breton are not going to sit quietly by while their MP and their police chief sell them out. So yeah, I was happy to support them. We were the only firearms organization there. And a lot of people came out to see us. So it was great.
Yeah. So anyway, you had just mentioned a little about some predictions. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. But there's sort of an interesting thing happening. And I think I mentioned it in the podcast last time. If, you know, there's a big difference between how I'm feeling about all this, and I think you share the same feelings, than we had 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, if you look at what we've done as a community, we've fought these people in the courts. We're fighting them in the political arena. We're fighting them in the media. We've gotten tons of media recently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're fighting them through boycotting and everything else we just talked about. But it's almost like I have this strange feeling that this isn't going very well at all. Because remember, one of the predictions I said is they're going to roll out this piece of garbage program. They're going to basically break everything because they plan not to pay gun owners for their guns and to defraud them almost, mm-hmm. right? Like, don't worry, you might get some compensation, but it's not guaranteed. Just tell us what you have. Oh, we're out of money. Give us where all your stuff or you're going to go to jail kind of thing.
Yeah, it's insane.
But I don't think it's going to go like they think it is. Even trying to fool people into thinking it was successful. And I don't think they're getting the amount of cooperation that they think they are. The leaked audio, the media ran far, far harder and far, far farther than I thought they ever would on that story. And then I've even had a couple of friendly mainstream media interviews. It's just, I don't know. I think
narrative feels like it's shifting.
It does.
You know, I think the Liberals counted on having buy-in from Canadians, not necessarily gun owners, but, you know, all the normies out there. And I see even the discussions. I try really hard to get outside my echo chamber on social media and, you know, go down Reddit rabbit holes and all of those things. And, you know, even in my mommy groups on Facebook, the conversation has completely changed. People of all stripes are against this now. And it's great. It does not have the wings that they were hoping it would have. And yeah, and that's the best we can do. As long as people keep supporting us, we're going to run around and make this as difficult as possible for them. Be a thorn in their side. Every little, you know, bit of ammo, so to speak, that we can we can get, we're going to use, like the audio recording and the public display, this Cape Breton rally. That was important. And yeah, if they move into another jurisdiction next, if they continue with this, then we'll do it there too. Like we will not and we cannot stop. As long as people keep supporting us, we have to keep pushing against this.
Yeah. You know, we're near the finish line, whether we are going to lose everything and these people are going to just march on with all their plans or whatever, or we actually get some them pulling back a little bit or force an election or anything. Like we can't let up now after we've come all this way. I really feel like that. And I really feel a little bit more hopeful because it's just not going the way they thought.
Yeah. And I mean, doing nothing isn't an option for us. We could just sit back and do nothing and just share a bunch of news stories. And, you know, I'm not interested in doing that. If that was the way we were handling things, I'd probably quit and do something else. But to me, that's the point of this, is you have to keep showing opposition, keep embarrassing them, keep making it difficult, keep making it uncomfortable. You know, this is not the political win that they thought it was going to be, between, you know, concerns from law enforcement, the public safety concerns, which are really real and valid, budgetary concerns. Like, this is a mess. And I think the more we expose that and show that even in tiny little Cape Breton, if you thought you could escape us there, you're wrong. We're going to be everywhere you are, every step of the way, opposing you at every turn, period.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, like I believe that with everything inside me. So,
yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to turn around for the Liberals, because recently, as in, I don't know, yesterday or the day before, the Liberals decided it would be in their best interest to vote against bail reform.
Yeah, this is nuts. So this was a conservative bill, C-242, the Jail Not Bail Act. You know, we have the three-word stuff. But anyways, it was put forward by conservative Arpan Khanna, and it was defeated 142 to 196, which means not only did the Liberals vote against it, but so did all the other parties in unison, voted against it. And I'll tell you, there was a statement on social media from the Toronto Police Services Association, and it was a statement of disappointment. They have been screaming from the rooftops for months, if not years, that they need bail reform. Ever since C5 and C75, it has been an absolute mess out there. Cops are doing the best they can with these violent repeat offenders, armed home invaders, rapists, all kinds of scourge of society. But the problem is they just get back out of prison. And, you know, you would think it's been 6 months since the election. So the Liberals have 6 months in office. They've, you know, they should have their priorities lined up. Their priority is to chase around Fish and Game Club members for their long guns. Their priority is not advancing their own bail reform. They keep saying, be patient, it's coming. People can't be patient when one out of every three violent offenses being committed is by somebody out on bail, right? You could cut it by one third right away.
Yeah.
This should have been a priority for them, not launching the buyback. So, you know, I think if their priority is to keep punching gun owners in the face, despite the rising crime and violence that law enforcement and every other criminal expert is speaking out against, then it's our priority to keep punching them right back.
Yep. So absolutely. And it's, you know, it's interesting, and I don't want to get into the other bills, but Trudeau was promising bail reform and was backpedaling on what they were doing just before prorogation. Then nothing happened for whatever it was, 3 months. Then the election happened, which it was an election promise, just like the buyback apparently was an election promise that they would fix this, and you know, this bail reform thing. And 6 months goes by, they've got a bill to that the Minister of Industry can turn off, you know, sever your ability to get on the internet. There's a new bill. Not only that, but there's part of it that if they do that to you, if they cut off your access to the internet, your ability to legally go onto the internet, that there's a gag order as well, that if you tell people about that, that they use that on you, that that's a separate offense. Then they got these censorship laws, the big tech censorship laws and the hate speech law. Like, they're rolling all of this stuff out, along with the gun buyback.
At the same time, they're taking your guns.
Yeah, that's right. And they're taking your guns away. And then as far as the bail reform, they're like, oh, be patient. It's coming. It's might be another year or two. Like, I think it's one of those situations where don't listen to what somebody says. Look at what they do, right? Their actions are telling you everything. If you look at their actions, like, this is insane. I don't even know why even liberals aren't not okay with all this stuff. Like, I would think liberals would be like, this looks a little weird. Maybe I voted wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's dystopian. Like, it's, you know, like, I feel like we're talking about some conspiracy theory, not actual, you know, events going on in Canada. Like, it feels like something out of a movie. And yeah, I think when the Minister of Public Safety, Gary Nandasangari, was asked why he's moving forward with the buyback, that's what he said. Oh, well, it was an election promise. Well, so is bail reform. And people are literally dying because you haven't done it. But that's not a priority for you. Chasing us around to get our firearms is. So I don't know. Congratulations. I mean, elbows up or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, it just seems crazy to me.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. So all that to say, no matter how crazy it's looking, the Liberals are undermining their own support. And that's one of the reasons why it's to be a little bit hopeful. But at the end of the day, we want to just keep fighting these people. We want to keep punching them in the face. Because if you're ever going to put in the effort, put your back into that, now's the time to do it. So anyway. All right.
Well, and I was talking to somebody this morning and I said that we are punching above our weight. You know, we're the only organization still fighting in court. We're the only organization that showed up for the election. And here we are blowing 50 cal size holes in their gun grab, you know, between the leaked audio, between Cape Breton. And yeah, if I got to jump on a plane and go to Fredericton or Winnipeg or whatever they try and do next, we'll be there. But I think that this has been a very shaky rollout for them. And they've got to be sitting there thinking like, oh boy, you know, what a mess. So I'm excited about it. It's been a very rough 2 weeks for the Minister of Public Safety.
Yeah, more for the government in general. All right. I think we covered everything.
Okay.
All right. thanks for coming into work, even though you're sick, and for traveling, you know, just through that whole sickness and being outside all day in Cape Breton and all the rest of that stuff. So I'm sure I appreciate it. And I'm sure everyone else appreciates it too.
It was my absolute pleasure to be there. And God bless Cape Breton. They're great people.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for the update and we'll see you in the next one.
All right. We'll see you then.
All right. That's going to do it for episode 196 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks everybody for watching and listening. And I have work for you to do. Really important that you take the information that you heard in this podcast and you spread it around to other gun owners. You have to explain to people. I know it was a difficult thing to explain for that first 15 minutes, but you can paraphrase this in short form and just say, listen, if you don't believe the numbers here, watch this section of the podcast or what have you. But it's important that you communicate this to everybody. The government intends to steal your stuff. Literally give you an ultimatum, a volunteer, but remember it's voluntary, right? You need to volunteer your property for free or have it deactivated at your own expense and nobody's going to pay for it, or voluntarily go to jail or involuntarily go to jail, right? So anyway, that's your voluntary program. So communicate to everybody what's going on, really important. But here's something that you can do if you want to actually do something. Make an appointment in person to see your Liberal MP if you live in a Liberal riding and jot down these figures and where they come from. You don't need to go there with a whole script, you know, four pages or whatever. All this information is on the CCFR website under a couple of web stories. The one is the press release, the media advisory that we sent the media, whatever, a couple of weeks ago on how many firearms the government intends to pay for. And then add what I said in this podcast, you know, just some of the background about how many firearms there are in circulation and the fact that we know, and that we know that the government knows what that number is, at least at a minimum. They know there's more than a million in circulation. So hold their feet to the fire on this. Go, what exactly are you trying to do? You guys promised for 5.5 years that it wasn't our fault, that you would compensate us, all that stuff. Oh, don't worry, it's fairly compensated. What do you got? What do you, you know, it's funny because remember when we used to say registration leads to confiscation? It was like, oh, you conspiracy theorists, we just want to know what you have, keep you accountable. You know, have the record in case your firearm gets stolen. You know, we're never going to ban all these guns. They ban them all. They're like, oh, don't worry. I don't know what you guys are complaining about. We're going to pay for these guns. You're going to be fairly compensated. You know, what's the big deal? You can just buy another gun. It's like, oh yeah, we're not going to compensate 99% of the people if everyone participated, right? Remember, these numbers are if everyone participates and every firearm in circulation is registered and whatever for, you know, registered for reimbursement for compensation. That's not going to happen, of course, but still, this is what they intend. So ask them, ask your liberal MP, what is it you are trying to get started here? Like, what is it exactly, what are you trying to do by telling people that you're going to pay for these guns in an ill-advised confiscation scheme anyway, turn away from bail reform, let the criminals continue to cause crime, violence, mayhem, and chaos all over Canada, and then you're going to rip me off, what, to make me uncontrollably angry? Like, what are you guys up to? And are you okay, as a human being that lives in my riding, are you okay with this? Is this what you think is a good idea? And you know what? When you put it to them like that, I don't know, maybe it'll cause a little bit of unrest in the Liberal caucus and cause problems. And maybe that's another way that we can fight back and get them to step back on this whole thing, right? Really important. The other thing I would mention is if you do have a spare few minutes, write in your own words, not even a paragraph, like half a paragraph. You know, you guys should be covering the fact that the Liberal Party is looking to rip off gun owners. They're going to trick them into exposing what they have, and they're not going to pay for them. Here are some of the figures. Please have somebody on. You can offer me. You can offer Tracy. You can say, just cover it, right? Talk to a gun store owner. You know, just do something to get it into the media. That's really important. Anyway, all right. That's all I have for you for today. Thank you all for your support. If you would consider supporting the CCFR, you can become a member at ccfr.ca. You can make a recurring donation if you like. That works too. Or you can become a CCFR insider. So if you donate more than $20 a month in a recurring manner, you are automatically included into our monthly meetings, insider meetings, where you have access to all the other insiders and Tracy and me, and you can tell us your ideas or ask the questions or whatever. It's a cool little group, and it's a great way to help the CCFR on an ongoing basis. All right, that's it. Thanks again, everyone, for watching. Make sure you spread the word. Take care, and we'll see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.